appropriate song Greening Up by David Mallet, and Lorraine loves David Mallet, so do I, and that was a nice spring song we heard. Daylight by Beth Amsel, who used to live in Boulder. Her sister works at E-Town. And The Celtic New Year by Van Morrison. Love me some Van. Live and Die. You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, and online at kgnu.org. Thanks for listening. This has been Highway 322. My name is Ginger. And now it's time for Ragtime America with Jack Rummel.
Ragtime America. I'm Jack Rummel. I'll be with you for an hour of recorded ragtime this evening. And tonight we're going to do something that we do periodically as I discover material for it, and that is to visit some obscure composers for which we don't have enough works to do an entire show, but we have enough to do about half of a show. So we put two of them together, and presto, we have a show. So we'll start with William Conrad Paulla, born 1876, died 1939. He was born to immigrant German parents in New York City during the centennial year of the United States. His father worked in a piano factory, possibly as a technician, and so William was definitely exposed to pianos at an early age. Had formal education in harmony and theory along with orchestration. Did this at the Chicago Conservatory, followed by a time at the New York College of Music, primarily on piano. But he proved his skills and recorded some of his pieces. He was also well-versed in organ performance, and he was a gifted classical performer as well. About 1901, the family relocated to Chicago, and he caught the composing bug there because starting in 1902, there was a steady stream that flowed from his pen for more than 25 years. However, starting with his fourth known composition, which is called The Ragtime Laundry, I've not found that one anywhere. Paulla, who had already altered the family name to Paulla from Poya, chose to issue it under his first of two synonyms, the thinly veiled and Americanized W.C. Powell. And there are a few possible reasons for this, but it seems that he wanted his more serious pieces, classical-type pieces, associated directly with the European name Paulla, and the frivolous or popular pieces with the anglicized version Powell. By 1903, he was working for Chicago publisher Victor Kremer. William's first truly popular hit as W.C. Powell was called The Gondolier, which was published in 1903. So let us listen at this point to The Gondolier, as played by the twin pianos of Glenn Jenks and Dan Grinstead. Thank you. Glenn Jenks and Dan Grinstead. The Gondolier, subtitled an intermezzo, not a rag, but an intermezzo. But those two gentlemen injected a little bit of syncopation into that piece. Written by W.C. Powell in 1903. He followed that up in 1904, also written under the name of Powell. This piece was written in honor of the St. Louis World's Fair and was a good seller. It's titled Funny Folks, and here is Dave Wright. Funny Folks, played by Dave Wright, written by W.C. Powell in 1904. Well, that same year, he added a more rural-sounding name to his list of pseudonyms, that of Cy Seymour. And he only used it for a few pieces, and we're going to listen to three of those. The first we'll listen to is called Holy Moses. Also sold very well. This one written in 1906. And here is David Thomas Roberts on a somewhat scratchy piece of vinyl. Thank you. That was David Thomas Roberts playing Holy Moses from 1906 by Cy Seymour, in this case, pseudonym for W.C. Paula. Under that same pseudonym, a little earlier in 1904, he composed a piece called The Panama Rag, not to be confused with the ragtime piece called Panama, written by Will Tyers. This is Panama Rag, and our performers this evening are the members of the Ophelia Ragtime Orchestra. Panama Rag, the Ophelia Ragtime Orchestra. And the last one we'll play this evening, written under the pseudonym of Cy Seymour from 1904, is called Dixie Bells, spelled B-E-L-L-E-S, as in Beautiful Women. Here is Tom Breyer. Thank you. recorded on a synthesizer, I do believe. Dixie Bell is played by Tom Breyer. Well, in 1905, Paula moved back to Manhattan to work as the New York representative and manager of the Victor Kremer Publishing Company there. Very quickly caught the attention of Jerome Remick, and he hired him as an arranger around 1906, along with J. Bodewald Lampa, who we have featured on this show several times. These two considerable talents, through them, the arranging and composing departments of Remick turned out music that was not only harmonically coherent and user-friendly, but also nearly error-free. Let's play some pieces that were done during that time. Here's a piece from 1907 by W.C. Paula called Ragtime Eyes, and the performer is Elliot Adams. Thank you. Ragtime Eyes is played by Elliot Adams, written under the pseudonym of W.C. Powell. Under that same pseudonym in 1909 came a piece called The Missouri Rag, I'm sorry, 1912, The Missouri Rag, and it will be played tonight on the banjo by Leroy Larson. Leroy Larson playing four-string banjo there, and Missouri Rag by W.C. Powell from 1912. Let's move backwards to 1909 and pick up a piece called Bachelor's Button. And here is the Chrysanthemum Ragtime Band, once again on a bit of scratchy vinyl. Thank you. The Chrysanthemum Ragtime Band has brought us Bachelor's Button from 1909. Well, in 1921, Paula took another break from writing and publishing and started leading his own orchestra for several years. His biggest hit of the 1920s came in 1927 when he was 51 years old. It's called The Dancing Tambourine, written under the name of W.C. Paula because he felt it was more of a classic work. It's actually a novelty work, and it was quickly picked up by many top pianists and band leaders of the day, including Paul Whiteman. Here we have it by the piano duo of Dick Hyman and John Sheridan. Dick Hyman and John Sheridan has brought us the closing piece for W.C. Paula, Dancing Tambourine from 1927. Paula died in 1939 at age 63. Let's finish up with a few pieces from Harry James Lincoln, born 1878, died 1937. Born in Pennsylvania, lived there and spent his entire life there, actually, in the state. Don't know much about his education. He did become a choir master and organist in a church there and an associate conductor for the Williamsport Symphony. His first composition, which was self-published in early 1900, is called The Midnight Fire Alarm, and it became one of the best-known pieces in the publisher's catalog. Let's listen to the duet of Bill Edwards and Marty Mincer. Midnight Fire Alarm from 1900. It's a march. What a great one it is. Well, after the success of that, the following year he wrote a piece which turned out to be the second most played march in our history. The first, of course, being Stars and Stripes Forever by Sousa. This one comes in at number two, written by Harry Lincoln. It's called Repaz Band, R-E-P-A-S-Z, named for a Williamsport community group which started in 1831 and still performs. There's some point of controversy about the authorship of this, but most people feel that it is Harry Lincoln's piece. So let's listen to it tonight. We have a special performance by the United States Air Force Tactical Command Band. We'll be right back. right. The U.S. Air Force Tactical Command Band and a piece by Harry J. Lincoln called Repas Band or Repas Band from 1904. Did your high school marching band play that? I can remember that mine did. Well, let's get on to some rags, because Harry Lincoln did write several rags. Here's one from 1909. It's called the Rag Bag Rag, and it'll be performed by a Dixieland group from the San Francisco area called the Minstrels of Annie Street. Rag Bag Rag, as played by the Minstrels of Annie Street. Well, Harry Lincoln joined the publishing firm of Vandersloot Music early in 1904. He formed his own publishing company, the Harry J. Lincoln Publishing Company, also formed one, the U.S. Music Publishing Company, and put out a lot of marches, reveries, waltzes, and an occasional rag. And here's another one of those. From 1910. It's called the Beeswax Rag. Here are the Elite Syncopators. Mm-hmm. The Beeswax Rag from 1910. That was the Elite Syncopators featuring Terry Parrish on piano. Well, by 1920, Harry Lincoln was writing tunes for hire from lyricists who sent in their poetry, and he would write the tunes necessary to create the songs. He also contributed a great number of pieces to piano roll manufacturers, notably the Wurlitzer Company. He died in Philadelphia just after his 59th birthday. We don't have a very concise record of his output, but we do know while he wrote very little ragtime, he was still a substantial part of the overall output of instrumentals during the ragtime era. We'll close with a piece from 1910. It's the Halley's Comet Rag. Halley's Comet, I think, only appears in our sky about once every 75 years. In 1910, it came through. And so Lincoln wrote a piece in honor of that, and we'll go out with that. It'll be played by Dave Majak. This is Jack Rummel. Thanks very much for joining us this evening as we profile two obscure composers of the ragtime era, W.C. Paula and Harry Lincoln. Hope you'll join us again in coming weeks for some more recorded ragtime. Time is 9:01. You're listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, and online at kgnu.org. Stay tuned for Swing Shift.
Thanks once again, Jack, and a hearty good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Gloss with tonight's version of Swing Shift here on KGNU. Tonight we're going to feature a performance of the Band of Renown, of course led by Les Brown, from May 12, 1957, live at a ballroom in Portland, Oregon. So be sure to stay tuned for some wonderful sounds. From 1938 until his death in 2001, Les Brown, Sr., led one of the great big bands out there. And nearly seven decades, I think he's the record holder of big band leaders that just remained in virtually continuous operation from 1938 on. He attended